Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, good to have everybody in this afternoon, and we've already realized we've got a lot of new folks today, and we just want to welcome you. And for those of you joining us on television, we've probably got the same thing. We've probably got a lot of folks that are just catching us for the first time, and we're just an informal Bible study. And we take it pretty much verse by verse, and all we can do is let the Holy Spirit open your understanding and trust that you'll learn to study it and enjoy it like never before. We have one book we haven't advertised now for a long time, and it's just 88 questions and answers that comes from the material in our program. And we just got a new shipment in again a while back, so we have plenty of them available in case any of you are interested in that. Just call the 800 number, and we'll get them out to you. All right, we're going to pick right up where we left off in our last half hour, and that will be on into Daniel chapter 2. And we'll start right there at verse 1. And again, in case some of you were new and missed the last program, remember that Daniel was one of the four young lads that were taken captive. And when I say young, they were really young. They were probably between 12 and 14 years of age. And I want to have you keep that in mind when you see what responsibility the Lord gives this young man or this young lad, Daniel, at the age of 12, 13, or 14. And he's taken captive by the Babylonians down to Babylon. And so in this number one chapter, we had pretty much that introduction, how he ends up down in the palace of the king. All right, now when we come into chapter 2, verse 1, we're going to pick up where Daniel is going to be put in a tremendous place of responsibility. And don't forget his age. Now he might be 14 or 15, but he's not a man. He's still just a child. All right, so in verse 1 of Daniel chapter 2, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, you got to watch your language, otherwise you say, now, wait a minute, back there in chapter 1, it said third year. No, what's the difference in who we're talking about? In chapter 1, verse 1, it's the third year of the Jewish king, so Jehoiakim. But now we're talking about the first year of the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar. All right? And so he dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep broke from him. And the king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, and the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans. Now, those were all various groups of what they called the wise men in the time of the ancients. And they were primarily demonically inspired and enlightened sorcerers and the witchcraft and so forth. And then the last group, the Chaldeans, were pretty much what you would call the wise. They were probably the guys that really used some intelligence, especially in discerning the solar system and so forth. They all had a pretty good handle on it already. So anyway, all these so-called wise men of Babylon are now before the king. In verse 3, and the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream. Now, I know there's a lot of controversy. Some people think he remembers it, but he just wants to put these guys on trial to see if they're good enough to recover it. But on the other hand, I have to feel, since we're dealing with the omnipotence and the omniscience of God, being able to reveal to Daniel what the old king dreamed, I think he had totally forgotten it. But he had understood the ramifications of it. For one reason or other, he understood that this was something totally different than anything he'd ever dreamed before. And that's why he is so set on having it recovered. However, the king said, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. So then he spoke the Chaldeans, or then spoke the Chaldeans, the more or less upper crust of all these soothsayers. The Chaldeans then said, in Syriac. Now, again, this isn't all that important, but the scoffers sure like to pick up on it. From chapter 1, verse 1, up into this verse, Daniel has been writing in the Hebrew language, and now he switches over to the Syriac, or what we call the Aramaic, and then he speaks in the Aramaic all the way over to chapter 7, and then he finishes the book in Hebrew again. And, of course, the scoffers just scream at that. That just goes to show it's a forgery. No, Daniel is not a forger. It just shows he's already been in Babylon long enough to be comfortable with the Aramaic or the Syriac language. On the other hand, he was raised under the Hebrew language, so he's able to use that as well. That's just a sideline. But anyway, now he's speaking in the Aramaic language. He says, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show thee interpretation. And the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone. I can't tell you what I dreamed. You got to tell me. Kind of preposterous request, isn't it? The king is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Now, what does that tell you? That's the mentality of these Oriental despotic dictators. And they haven't changed. See, we see the same thing today. Old Saddam Hussein was notorious for his cruelty. And Nebuchadnezzar was no different, see? And so it made no compunction to him. If these guys couldn't do the impossible, he'd just as soon cut them up and feed them to the dogs as not. And I want you to get that picture of the thinking of this Oriental king. All right, now then, verse 6. But he says, if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, verse 7, let the king tell his servants the dream, and then we can interpret it. But the king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain the time because you see the thing. You go, what's he telling him? He says, you're just arguing for time. You better come up with it or you're dead. You're gone. And then in the Oriental system of things, it wasn't just the husband and father who was put to death, but who else? The wife and children. That was all part of their system, see? All right, so read on. Verse 7, or verse 8. The king answered and said, I would know of a certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof, or else. That's about the attitude. Tell it to me, or else. You are dead ducks, we'd say today. All right, next verse. The Chaldeans answered before the king. Now, these are the more elite of the four groups. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon this earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that could ask such things of any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. King, you are asking the impossible. Nobody can do what you're asking. Verse 11, it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods. Now, look at that. That's in a small g. The gods. Well, you see, that's all the pagan world understood. We're all their gods and goddesses. Now, always remember that other than Israel, nobody had a concept of the one true God. Not an iota, see? And so all they can fall back on are their pagan, small G-O-D-S, their small pagan gods. See? Plural. That's what I want you to see. All right? But they recognize that even their gods did not dwell with flesh or with mankind. And so verse 12, now then, for this cause the king was angry and furious. Now you want to remember, he's an absolute despotic dictator. He has absolutely no kindness toward the human race whatsoever unless he can benefit from it. And so the decree went forth, verse 13, that the wise men should be slain. Now who's in the same bunch? Daniel and his three friends, Meshach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so Daniel immediately comes under this decree to be put to death along with all the rest of the wise men of Babylon. All right, now in 14. Now we come back into the crux of the matter. Daniel, just a lad, 14, 15 years old. And Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who has gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. In other words, he was already on his way to carry out the king's decree. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree so hasty from the king?" So Arioch made the thing known to them and explained the circumstances. Verse 16. Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time. What is for Daniel wants with time? What would you do? Pray! Absolutely! Daniel is, in so many words, saying, just give us some time to pray about it. See? That's what he's begging for. All right? So he desired of the king that he'd give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation after he's prayed about it. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to his three fellow Jewish lads, all the same age, who had been renamed, of course, by the Babylonians to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they were really Meshach, Meshach, and Abednego in their original. All right, verse 18. And that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret or this dream, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. See how crucial this is getting? Now, verse 19. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Not the gods of paganism, but the God of heaven. See, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." Now watch this, because God has never changed. It's still just as appropriate today as it was when Daniel wrote it. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings or world rulers. He setteth up kings or world leaders. He giveth wisdom to the wise, knowledge to them that know understanding. He, now remember we're talking about the God of heaven. He revealeth the deep and the secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. And then Daniel prays, "I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desire to thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter." Now, I'm going to keep hammering at it. Imagine a kid 15 years of age with this kind of a situation, see? His faith, how well grounded he was before the Babylonians actually took him captive. Now, verse 24, "Therefore, Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, begging on behalf of those old pagan, idolatrous, goddess and god-worshipping pagans, Daniel still has the wherewithal to plead their case as well. Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation." So then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah." Not really a man, a child. "That will make known unto the king the interpretation." So the king answered and says to Daniel, whose name now was Belteshazzar, "Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen in the interpretation?" Now again, why is he so aghast? You're just a kid. And you can tell me what all these magicians can't? You see that? Now, why am I making the point? I want you to realize the power and the omniscience of the God of Daniel. But my goodness, He's not just the God of Daniel. I trust he's the God of everyone in this room today. He hasn't changed. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's just as much the God of wisdom today as he was back here with Daniel. See? Don't ever lose that. We're dealing with the same God. Now, granted, he deals with us in a different mode than he did with the Old Testament believers, but it's the same God, the sovereign God of the universe. All right? So, verse 27. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret. Now, lock that word. I'm going to come back to it after a bit. The secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that the Babylonians knew nothing of. See? There is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. Now, I think maybe this is as good a place as any. Come back with me to Deuteronomy. Most of you already know what it's going to be, don't you? Deuteronomy 29:29. I dropped a note the other day to the old gentleman who made me aware of this verse years and years ago when hadn't been in Oklahoma all that long, and he was a retired college president, he was a retired army general, and he was one of my best students. And he came up one night after class and he said, Les, I think I have found a verse that you will just love. And I had never seen it before, and this was it. And I wrote him the other day. I said, Dr. Baker, I want you to know I use this verse over and over and over, and how I thanked him for making me aware of it. Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things. See that? The secret things. Those things that man have absolutely no possible ability to understand, because they're in the mind of God, see? The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed. In other words, he'll reveal these things little by little. And these things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children. Now, this, of course, is Moses and is speaking of Israel, but it's still one of those verses that carries all the way through because of God's unchanging omnipotence. So always remember that God is the one who keeps things secret. Now, the reason I make such a big deal over the secret things of God is because our apostle, now turn all the way up the New Testament, our apostle Paul is constantly letting us know that all the things that he is writing in his epistles you will not find anywhere else in Scripture because they were kept secret. God kept it secret until he revealed it. All right, the first thing I want to look at is Romans 16:25. And most of Christendom does not understand this to this day. And that's why they disagree with me in my line of teaching. They don't understand that Paul has things revealed to him that no one else had ever been given. The 12 didn't know them. The Old Testament prophets didn't know them. And they were strictly kept secret until God revealed it to this apostle. And that's what makes his apostleship so uniquely different. Romans 16, verse 25. And if you've never learned anything else before, remember this today. I don't care if you remember nothing else today. I want you to remember this. That this is why Paul constantly, through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, refers to things that have been kept secret. Our God is a God who can keep secrets. All right, Romans chapter 16, verse 25. Now to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel, the revelation or the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery. And what's the other word for mystery? Secret. See? And so here Paul has now been given the wherewithal to proclaim a message that has been kept secret since when? Since the ages began. All right, now this is just one or two of them. I'm not going to have time to look at all of them. But turn ahead to Ephesians chapter 3. verses 1 through 9 are all dealing with this very thing, how that God has revealed to this apostle things never before revealed. But I'm going to bring it down to the frosting on the cake, if I can put it that way, verse 9. Haven't got time to read all eight of them, but let's just read verse 9. Ephesians 3, verse 9. To make all men see. He's not just the apostle of Israel now. He's the apostle of all, Gentile as well as Jew. And to make all men see what is the fellowship of the secret, the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God. It was kept secret. Nobody had ever heard these things before. That's why Peter writes in his little epistle, in Paul's things are things hard to be understood. Why? They've been kept secret. And it was never revealed until this man, see? And so from the beginning of the world, these things have been hid in God, the same God who created all things by Jesus Christ. Well, now that was all aside. You got that free for nothing? Come back quickly to Daniel. Come back to Daniel now. And so Daniel makes it so evident that what he is able to do is to reveal the secrets, because his God knows everything and will reveal as he sees fit. So back to Daniel chapter 2, verse 28 again. But there is a God in heaven, the same one we deal with. There is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Now, you see, that's the secret of why did Nebuchadnezzar have an idea that this was such an important revelation in this dream that it would actually be worth killing all the wise men of Babylon to get at the core of it. He knew that there was something of intrinsic value to this dream, and that's what it was. It was foretelling the whole future of the Gentile world, and we still teach it as such to this day. All right, reading on. What shall be in the latter days, halfway through verse 28, thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. Now verse 29. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And that's why I think any student or teacher of prophecy will have to use Daniel as the foundation for all their teaching. Daniel is the very bedrock of all of our end time prophecy. And even old pagan King Nebuchadnezzar had an inkling there was something more than just another dream. All right? Verse 30. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Now, we have to understand there that when Daniel begins to unfold and recover this dream, and we'll be looking at it in a future program, how he's going to lay out the whole timeline of Gentile history, starting with Nebuchadnezzar himself, who was the first of the Gentile empire builders. Now, there were other kingdoms, of course, but Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar was the very first of the Gentile then-known world empires. Now, you got to remember, the then-known world wasn't all that great. It was that part of the Middle East around the Euphrates River, maybe on a little ways, and then across over the land of Israel. That's why it's in Scripture, because Babylon was intrinsically involved with Israel, and then, of course, down to Egypt. But that was the then-known world. And old Nebuchadnezzar already had all of that under his thumb. He was an absolute monarch, see? And so from this point on, then, we're going to see the unfolding of all the great Gentile empires that came down the pipe, one right after the other, the Babylonian, and then the Medes and the Persians, and then the Greeks, and then the Romans, and then the Roman Empire went into the dustbin of history and disappeared, and pretty much the rest of the time came under the control of the Muslim world, and now here we are back in our present day, and all four of these kingdoms are back in the news. Back in the news, almost every day. You say, what? Well, goodness sakes, for the last 4 or 5 years, all we've had front page news is what country? Iraq, and what's Iraq? Babylon. Baghdad is only about 20 miles from the very ancient ruins of Babylon, see? All right, then the next one are the Medes and the Persians. Well, who were the Persians? Iran. That joker's in the mails every day. Iran is back up at the top, see? All right, and then came the Greek. Well, what's the Greek Empire? Well, that was that empire that brought about all of our classics in literature and music and art and architecture and all that. And they're pretty much back in the news. And then what followed the Greek? The Roman. And now we've got the revived Roman Empire coming up in Western Europe. I still feel that that's the prophetic empire, the revived 10 nations of Western Europe. And so all of these things are now in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. But I want you to jump up to the New Testament in our closing remarks, that with regard to God knowing the end from the beginning, come all the way up to Acts chapter 2. I may have to hurry. We only got a minute left. Acts chapter 2, and drop in at verse 22 and 23. Because when we look at the world today, you almost wonder, is anybody still in control? Don't you worry about it. Yes, our God is still in control. Everything that happens is for a purpose. Everything. You know, I told my oldest son way last spring when all the presidential primaries began. I said, Greg, never forget. I think it was FDR who said it. I'm not sure, but I think he did. That elections are not won by people. They're won by events. And I said, just watch and see what happens between now and election day. Well, what was the big event that turned the election? The financial crash. That's all it took. And bingo, everything went the other way by God's design. See? All right, quickly. Acts chapter 2. Let's just go down to verse 23. Where Peter is, of course, referring to the crucified, resurrected Messiah. And he says, him being delivered by the determined counsel and what? Foreknowledge of God. Was God taken by surprise at the crucifixion? No, it was all blueprinted. It had to happen. He had to die. He had to shed his blood. And that was what took the place of the atoning blood of the animals all the way up through the Old Testament. And so it was all according to the foreknowledge of God. And it has never changed to this very day.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.